are still here to be a part of what is one of the great communal sports experiences of all time, the NFL Draft.
From The Athletic, I'm Jeff Schwartz. Aaron Rodgers' ego got discount double checked. Joe Burrow is way ahead of his peers, and Bill Belichick is giving Brady the finger through Jared Stidham. It is Tuesday, April 28th. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. Welcome in, everyone. I am so thankful the NFL had their draft this weekend. I had the most fun I've had watching a draft game in so many years, just to have sports back. Plus, the first year I really studied intently the top of the draft. We did a mock draft as well. You nailed a pick, which we're going to get to in just a second, but it was a ton of fun. I'm glad the NFL went far with this. Before we get started, by the way, I think the winner of the weekend was Roger Goodell. He had a great weekend. He came across as a human.
Yeah, he did. He was fun talking to all the fans. He had that great moment where he fake hugged a guy on FaceTime. Listen, there's a lot of things that you get to throw at Roger Goodell every week if you pay attention to the NFL. For a few nights, he definitely nailed it. He had the tone right. And you know who else nailed it? And I've been kissing up to them on Twitter for days now, but I just want to say it again. The crew, especially Trey Wingo, of course, but the whole crew at ESPN, working with the guys from NFL Network, that is an unbelievable technological lift, not to mention a production lift. Remember, the people in the control rooms, and you need a lot of people to make a show like that, had to be distanced from one another. So this was unlike any other production any of them have ever been a part of, and they nailed it. It was great. It was so much fun to watch. We were very lucky.
And also, you mentioned Daniel Jeremiah. A lot of people had not heard really. No, they knew who he was, but the first time he was on ESPN, and to work with the personalities that he never worked with Trey Wingo before. He never worked with Mel Kiper in that capacity before. And he just slid in there seamlessly. I thought it was to your point, a great broadcast. I could have done a little bit less of the sad stories every time someone got drafted. I felt like it took away a little bit from the moment of excitement for the kid, even though I understand some of that is who they are, right? Those got a little bit much, but otherwise, I liked the telecast. I liked the feeling of sincere gratitude of being drafted. I feel like we got more of that this year with guys being at home rather than being, you know, with a camera in their face in their expensive suits in Las Vegas. We got just better reactions and all over the board, first round to fifth round. I thought the production was great. I don't know how they go back. They're going to obviously go back to live drafts at places, but I hope they keep some of the elements of the humanity and the compassion and like some of the reactions of players and some of the stories that they had, because now we know they can do this.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think it was a very conscious choice by producers to recognize the moment and recognize also who their audience was going to be. This was a big live event that a lot of people were going to be watching with more of their family than usual. I mean, right, in most years, don't you and I just call it kind of make Thursday draft night like, don't bother me, everyone. I'm going in there to watch the draft. And this year, it was a family event. And, you know, I mean, there were a lot of people watching with multiple generations, maybe wives, girlfriends, folks who wouldn't normally care. So adding the human touches, I thought, probably kept a lot more people interested. And by the way, best ratings ever. I know everyone's stuck at home. Ratings were going to probably be pretty good. But, man, that could have been a flop. And it wasn't. So we'll start our show with the most human emotion that we could find, the emotion of anger, of animosity, of who knows what. Aaron Rodgers is going to be your 2020 MVP. Book it now. That's basically how every single person that I follow on Twitter responded when his team traded up in the first round to draft a quarterback, Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, to be specific. Basically, Rodgers got farved. Okay, and now everyone thinks it's going to piss him off just enough to make him somehow even better. Here's the take. This is all a mind game by LaFleur in the front office. They know he's a chip on the shoulder kind of guy. They know this is going to piss him off so much. This is actually going to make them better. And just to make sure he got the message, they gaslit him and said he's going to be a quote-unquote great mentor. Holy hell. What are they trying to do to this guy? He's going to lose his mind, and it will make them better this year.
It will not make them better this year, but also they didn't draft a wide receiver the entire draft, which is their number one need. And this is the deepest wide receiver draft in years. They didn't draft one. They drafted a downhill running back and an H tight end with a third pick as well. I don't look. The parallels to Favre make only a little bit of sense if you just take it for what it is. They draft a first round quarterback when their other quarterback was getting the end, you know, the end of his career. But there's many differences between Favre situation and Rodgers, and Rodgers and Love. First of all, Rodgers was projected to be the top pick in the draft. Alex Smith went that year. Rodgers slid all the way down. It was a supreme value in pick number 23 where he was taken. All right. Jordan Love was the fourth quarterback, and you traded up to get him, right? So not the same situation. Secondly, I went and researched this. I looked it up. Brett Favre came back for 2005 season after saying he was going to retire. Then he told the team, I have 1 year left. I'm coming back for this season. So it made sense for the Packers to draft a replacement of high value when Aaron Rodgers slid to the back end of the first round. This is not the situation. You just paid Aaron Rodgers. Realistically, you cannot get out of Aaron Rodgers' deal until 2022, and you would still incur a $17 million cap hit. Can you trade him? Sure, you can trade him. The money is so grand, though, it's going to be hard, in my opinion, to find a suitable trade partner that would want Aaron Rodgers. So basically, you have drafted a first-round pick who's not going to play for three seasons. And I'll tell you this. The Packers players do not like this pick. I understand that they are not in the front office. I get that. But players understand the value of draft picks and what each mean because they went through the process themselves and the vendors have now seen what happens when you draft a guy in the first, second, third round, and so on, right? And what you're telling your team is off a 13-3 season, off a year you went to the NFC Championship game. And look, the numbers show there might have been a flawed 13-3, whatever. Players aren't looking at that, right? Players are looking at wins and losses and how they do each and every week. They're not looking at the metrics of how bad the 13-3 team they were. They don't care about that. The message you're sending to your players is, we don't want to win now. That's the message, because you could have added a wide receiver to your team to help them now. Instead, you're worried about 2022. And Gabe, lastly on this, before I let you come back at me now, we have got to understand the idea of the value of draft picks, right? What a first rounder means and what a fourth rounder means. If you draft a quarterback in the fourth round, that guy's not coming into play. He's coming in to be a backup. And hopefully one day he's a Russell Wilson, a Dak Prescott, right? He's a lightning in a bottle, okay? When you draft a guy in the first round, you draft him to play, right? So the idea is you're drafting his backup. To motivate Aaron Rodgers, this is a silly waste of value to motivate Aaron Rodgers, to bring in a guy who doesn't help his team, doesn't help him, and then you force him to be a mentor, which we're going to hit in just a second.
Well, okay, fine. So I was being a little bit sarcastic. By the way, when you say stupid things now, you could just get to say you were sarcastic, and that's okay. You're allowed to do that. So I was being a little bit sarcastic off the top. I don't actually think this was a calculated mind game for basically all the reasons you just said, but it will have that effect, okay? Aaron Rodgers has always been a chip on his shoulder guy. He has always wanted to shove it up the you-know-what of anyone who doubted him, okay? That's driven his whole career. The odd part is doing it from within his own organization. Now, if we think that he was going to learn from the experience, which we know was awful for him those first two or three years in Green Bay, if we think he's going to learn and somehow do the opposite and be a good mentor, that's insanity. Ask anyone who's ever been hazed if when it's their time to be the big guy, if they don't want to haze any longer. That's just not how it works, okay? Especially not in the culture of football. So this notion that coach is putting out there that he's going to be a great mentor, dude, you can't will that into being reality. Aaron Rodgers ain't doing jack for this kid.
I'm glad you mentioned it. If you take one thing away from the podcast, I take away what I'm about to tell you. What you think a mentor is not what a mentor is in the NFL, all right? The idea of mentorship in the NFL is taking someone aside. You know, you pick a rookie out, you bring him into your life, and you mentor him, right? Aaron Rodgers answering Brett Hundley's questions, who, by the way, was never a threat to take over for him,
nope,
or DeShone Kizer's questions, is not being a mentor, right? That's not being a mentor. Asking questions, answering in the middle of film review and talking about installing plays and basically, that's not a be a mentor. That's a normal teammate. Everyone does that, right? We all talk to each other. We ask questions. We ask our coach. We ask our teammates. It's pulling players aside and mentoring them. I'll give you an example. I was mentored. I know the feeling. Jordan Gross in Carolina, he pulled me aside. I lifted with his group. I watched film with him. He changed my stance. He took an actual, he actually cared about how I played, how I felt, how I prepared. That's what mentorship is. It's not just doing basic, nice teamwork stuff, which is what, look, guys who play with Rodgers for the most part have said, great teammate. Yeah, okay, fine. We I believe that. But there's a different part of the mentoring part. And we look at the history of the NFL, guys, and we see that most often these veteran quarterbacks don't mentor the young guys. Eli Manning flat said, I'm not mentoring Daniel Jones. It is not my job to mentor him, which is true. It's not Aaron Rodgers' job. Aaron Rodgers is being paid by the Packers to win football games. He's not being paid to pull Jordan Love aside after film meeting and sit with him for 30 minutes and teach him more stuff about about the NFL. Joe Flacco didn't want to do it. Big Ben didn't want to do it. Joe Montana didn't want to do it. These guys don't want – Brett Favre didn't want to do it.
And guess what? Wasn't going to do it.
And guess what? They all turned out fine anyways. Like, the idea that you need to have this mentor quarterback position, I would say that I would never have turned out as a seventh-round draft pick as good as I got to be without Jordan Gross's help. These guys are first-round draft picks. They're special players. I think we got jaded because what Alex Smith did for Pat Mahomes, where Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid and the Chiefs credit Alex Smith with helping Pat Mahomes get ready. Now, I still contend Pat Mahomes would have been a superstar. Maybe it takes a little longer without help from Alex Smith, but it felt like Alex Smith went out of his way to make sure Pat was ready. And there's a difference between just answering questions in meeting and being a good teammate and then the extra part of mentoring. That extra part is what people do not understand what mentorship is. I had NFL players hit me up on Twitter and say, yeah, man, you're right about this. Like, because that is what the extra part of mentorship is. I have been friendly with teammates of mine. I have not mentored them. There's a couple guys I tried to mentor. Some guys don't want that help. So the idea that, like, he's going to mentor him is such bullshit. It's not going to happen. And guess what, Packer fans? It's okay. If Jordan Love is going to be good, he's going to be good with or without the help of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, you know how Brett Favre used to mentor Aaron Rodgers? He would make him watch film for him and then come in and tell him to explain what he was seeing and then steal what he said in the meetings. That's how he would mentor him. He would alienate him. And you know what Aaron Rodgers did, by the way? And if we're going to get into the mindset of a quarterback, a superstar quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback who's maybe getting a shot in the arm from his own team, Aaron Rodgers used to ball out with the second team offense when they would practice, right? He would embarrass the first team defense when Favre was around to try to show coach, hey, look, I can do this. Is there a chance? And that made Favre pretty angry, and that probably made Favre hang around another year or two longer than he should have. Is there a chance that Jordan Love can spark something in Aaron Rodgers inadvertently? Forget how stupid this is for every other reason you said. Could it have some positive effect?
Well, sure, it can have some positive effect, but in the back of Aaron Rodgers' mind, he knows that that contractually he's there for two more years. I mean, unless they trade him, like I said, but his cap hit next year is like $45 million. Who's going to trade for a $45 million quarterback who's 37 years old? And look, if you want to use the excuse that, well, he gets hurt often, so we drafted Jordan Love for that reason. I mean, that's flimsy, I guess. I mean, it's sort of okay, but go get a veteran quarterback, right? Like, you don't need to have Jordan. I also think that there's this idea, Gabe, by the way, that and there's some good examples of, they, like, you have to have like that stud backup quarterback because of what happened with Nick Foles. Look, what Nick Foles did, guys, is miraculous. I keep telling everyone this. I don't think we appreciate the miraculous nature of what he did. He was not a good quarterback for that regular season when he came in. He wasn't even good against Atlanta. Then he balled out against Minnesota and Philly and then went back to being Nick Foles the next season. Like, that was so amazing. And yes, if you hope that's what happens here, right? Jordan Love is your supreme backup and Rodgers goes out and Jordan Love leads him to a championship. I mean, bless your heart. It ain't going to happen that way. So again, it's about the value of the draft pick. And you say, what helps your team win now versus later? Can Jordan Love help you in 2023? Yeah, he can. Or 2022? Yeah, he can. But what helps Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, would have fired him up more, Gabe, is drafting the first skill position player in the first round since he was taken in 2005. They didn't do that. They did not help him out at all. And they also, by the way, said, hey, we're going to run the football now. We're going to go ground and pound. That doesn't work in the NFL anymore. Like, it doesn't work. And so I just don't know. I just think the Packers are doing a disservice to Aaron. I mean, look, maybe it fires up, maybe it's not. But, Gabe, I got a question. If they would have drafted Brandon Ayuk or drafted T. Higgins or drafted who was at the back, Van Jefferson, or you know, someone at the back end of the first round, second round, would that have fired up Aaron Rodgers more than drafting Jordan Love?
Yeah, but people are motivated differently, and that might have motivated him in a happy way, and Aaron Rodgers is a chip on his shoulder guy. His life has been blessed, and yet he still thinks people are out to screw him. And maybe they knew something.
Well, the Packers clearly are.
Well, clearly.
The Packers are out to screw them.
You mentioned it, and it's the right place to end this part of the conversation. You're punchy today, man. I like this. But this is the first skill position player they've drafted since they drafted him. They have been notorious not to sign free agents, right? So Aaron Rodgers has basically never had great weapons. He has one pretty good receiver now, but they sort of lucked into that, I guess. Here's an interesting stat that Wingo tweeted. Only one of Aaron Rodgers' 364 career passing touchdowns was thrown to a receiver selected in the first round. One in his whole career. That was Mercedes Lewis, by the way, as if he was some mainstay in Green Bay. He never has had anyone who we all assumed would be great. He's made a few guys great, obviously. And sometimes you aren't drafted in the first round, you end up being pretty damn good.
Yeah.
But man, they've never bet on giving him a great weapon. And this has got to be bothering him today.
Of course. Right afterwards, there was an interview and he said he's furious. Of course he'd be furious. It just... Packer fans, I'm right about this, guys. I'm telling you. I know you think that I'm crazy, and you know you have Go Pack going your Twitter headline. I'm telling you guys. Guys in the locker room are not happy about this. Aaron Rodgers not happy about this. They, you know, they really should have done this. Man up and just trade Aaron Rodgers already. Yep. Like I don't like. I mean, that's what they should have done. Is just trade him, move on. I'm sure Belichick might have picked up the phone and entertained that idea. Aaron Rodgers probably had to restructure his deal to go there, but someone would have entertained it, and they lost, I think, a lot of their leverage now of making that move. After getting Jordan Love.
Yeah, I would not want to be Coach Matt LaFleur right now, who already was like clearly not having any authority over Aaron Rodgers. No one was fooled into thinking that Aaron was like, what do you think I should do here, coach? Like, he's there because Aaron basically told Mike McCarthy, like, screw you, dude, I'm doing whatever I want. And now this guy's his age with no experience, and we're supposed to believe that he's in control. He is screwed, man. His career hinges on this decision. Good luck, Matt LaFleur. This is going to be a rough one. All right. I'm just going to quote my guy, Adam Schefter, here. It's rare that Schefter would be the beginning of a take on this. This show's kind of about the hot takes, the people who are just kind of popping off, and then you kind of fill us in on what's really going on. So this is not to throw shade at Schefter, but I just want to quote him from the other day. All right.
Yes, please.
He tweeted, number one overall pick Joe Burrow has been studying the Bengals offense for weeks now. And one source said that he is so far ahead that he will be able to challenge for the starting quarterback job right away. Again, Schefter's no hot taker. Someone's telling him this. This isn't his opinion. People believe that because Joe Burrow has had a chance to sort of think about the Bengals playbook extra long, that he's now going to be NFL ready. That come September, it's Burrow time. The playbook is mastered. Jeff, how close is this?
So I like Adam Schefter a lot. I met him before. I think out of all the NFL like newsmakers, newsbreakers, he's like the least like team friendly. Does that make sense? You know, he's not just like feeding garbage from teams directly onto.
That's
teams.
Right.
Like, there's other guys that are doing it. So I appreciate Adam Schefter, and I didn't want to blast him for this. I thought about it, but it wasn't really blasting him per se. No. Blasting the quote. Look, here's the deal, guys. It's all grand. You can study the playbook now. Makes a lot of sense. But until you can actually have it coached to you, right? Understand the coaching concepts, understand the points of each play, understand what the issues are, what the problems are, the goal of the play. It doesn't really help you to just read a playbook. You know, maybe the quarterback's different because, you know, against this coverage, you throw that pass and you can lock that into your brain. But you have to see it happen. And even his coach, Zach Taylor was in, I think it was MMQB. And he said, or not MMQB, Football Morning America, the new Peter King article. He said, like, look, it's all great that he's doing that. But until you actually see it happen with the defense and in full speed, it doesn't really matter. So, I'm glad Joe Burrow's taking the step to learn the playbook. I think that's great. I'm commending him for trying to do as much as he can. But the idea that you're going to come in right away and just win a job because you studied the playbook ain't going to happen that way. He's going to win a job because he's the number one pick. And Andy Dalton's going to be on the Patriots probably. So like that's why he'll win the job. And maybe he's that good where he can come in right away. I do want to – this is kind of a broader topic, I think, Gabe, that is not being discussed as much. You know, with the NFL offseason not happening, right, the virtual offseason, and I think which is really silly. A lot of teams have canceled their virtual offseasons is – there are going to be a lot of rookies behind in training camp this year because they can't have an OTAs and they can't have an offseason program. And it's really, really going to hurt the late round draft picks who already don't get a lot of reps in training camp. And now they're going to be even condensed even more because A, there's less practice time now. And two, your goal now if you're a team, in my opinion, is not to develop young guys in training camp, which is part of the goal. It's now getting your older guys just ready to play because you've been out of it for so long now. You have to spend the early part of training camp getting guys back in shape, making sure they know their plays, you know, really honing down on installs. Because normally, Gabe, by training camp, it's the fourth time you've had the playbook installed. Phase one, phase two, mini camp, and then training camp, right? So fourth time you've had the offense installed. Now it's the first time. You know, Zoom, I don't count Zoom meetings as an offensive install, right? You have to be in person, taking notes, asking questions. And so a lot of players are going to be behind, including Joe Burrow. And I understand the idea that he's read the playbook, you know, through and through. Great. I don't think that's that big of a deal. But these late round draft picks, like myself, seventh round draft pick, I might have had no chance to make the team because I wasn't going to get enough reps.
Wait, okay. So you sort of breezed through something that's sort of obvious to you, but I need you to back up a step.
Yeah.
Phase one, phase two, and then...
Oh, yeah, offseason program. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the offseason program, I think it's still the same, just less hours now. So phase one is like, you lift and you do 2 hours of meetings. You do that for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Phase two is you do on the field activities, you know, plus...
That's
plus
for everyone so or just rookies? Spend,
no, everyone.
Okay.
But rookies are there for the whole offseason yep. program. And part of that is like you install the offense for, you know, over the first 3 weeks of that, and then you install it basically again, and then you have mini camp, you install it a third time. And so by training camp, it's a fourth time you've installed the offense from the start. I mean, this look, I know that people romanticize about how big an NFL playbook is. There's like 3 weeks to install. And by day 10, you're installing like three plays. Like it's not, you install a ton at the beginning. They throw a ton at you at the beginning. Day one, day two, I mean, 50 pages of plays. And then eventually you pare it back down. So there's going to be an interesting situation where a lot of rookies just aren't going to get practice reps because the veterans will take all the practice reps. And they won't just get the time to learn the plays as best as they could because you only make a team as a young player by knowing what you're doing. I mean, you have to be good, but know what you're doing because coaches do not put you into games or into practice if you don't know what you're doing because they look stupid then. So you don't have that opportunity to really grow in an offense or defense. And I think it'd be interesting to see how many late-round draft picks don't make teams this year or, you know, sent to practice squad. I mean, it might be hard to measure, but there'd be a couple that would have made the team maybe otherwise, but just there's no time to practice now.
Okay, wait a sec. So a couple more follow-ups, and then we'll come back to Burrow.
Yeah.
You're talking about install the offense four different times. I'm a little bit confused about the word. I've always used it and heard it, but now that you're saying it the way that you are, I'm actually not sure I fully understand. Why can't you install, I'm putting quotes up, install an offense over Zoom with guys taking notes? Like, what is it that's got to be so face-to-face and hands-on? And well, what does install even mean? Now I'm lost.
I mean, I don't even have I could find a playbook around here somewhere.
You can? That's so like, weird. Why do you have a playbook lying around?
I don't know if I have off-season manuals maybe, but look, so basically, you know, you put a play in, all you know, your coach installs a play, hey, we're gonna run zone, we're gonna run this pass protection, and you run through the film and blah blah blah, and you take notes and whatnot. But a lot of us learn via walkthroughs
okay.
and practice.
All right.
And like seeing things seeing things happen in person. As much as boring as walkthroughs are, they're great because you get to see, you know, you're just there. Okay, here comes this guy. I got this guy, right? He moves here. I got him. Here goes. So like you have to, a lot of us visualize it better when we see it in person.
Sure.
And so you write things down. I think it says, I think you have to write something down 22 times before you remember. That's what the coach told me one time. He probably was just BSing us. But a lot of us just learn by doing and by seeing in person what we're doing. And so I think that that's why the Zoom meetings are going to be tough for a lot of these young guys. You know, a lot of them aren't going to want to ask questions because they're in a giant room with a bunch of players. Sure. Normally, you know, they break off sometimes and have the veterans leave and the younger guys stay. And just, you know, like in-person communications work better when, you know, communications work better when you're in person. If me and you are talking at dinner in person, we communicate better than if we're doing it via phone or via you know, this medium. So I think that's the biggest difference is that we're not going to have that till the summer. I fully believe we're getting it football back and more colleges are announcing opening campuses. The NFL looks like they're on track. So I think we're going to have it. It might just be without fans or some fans, but I think we'll start up on time for the NFL.
All right. So let's bring it home with one more point on Burrow. So he followed up after these quotes from Schefter, which are obviously coming from a real source. So this notion that he's ahead because of the playbook is a thing that other people are saying. So Burrow says, quote, "They had me put down my top 10 plays that I had and send it to them so they can study them and see if they can have them in the offense if they don't currently have them in the offense. Okay, so I take that to mean that basically they were like doing the Kramer thing. Like, why don't you tell me the name of the play you want to run? Like, they're like, Bengals can't come up with their own plays. So they're like, hey, what'd Joe Brady do with you guys down at LSU? We'll do some of that. What the hell's he talking about?
I don't mind that, because in Zach Taylor's offense, if you look at kind of like the Shanahan offense, you know, the one he ran with McVay and Shanahan, you know, that's not what they ran at LSU. A five wide, a bunch of pass concepts, empty protection. So I actually like that. I like the Bengals are open to changing their offense to help him. I think that's actually something that they should be commended for.
Yeah, and they're going to have some weapons, right? So he's got another rookie in T. Higgins. They've got Mixon's young. Like, maybe A.J. Green will mentor some guys since he knows this is kind of the end of his run. Like, is there any hope that the Bengals maybe have a pretty decent offense this year? Seems like it.
I mean, possibly. Look, I think for rookie quarterbacks, it's really hard to know who's going to be good and who's not, you know, early on. The Bengals offensive line still needs a little bit of work. So I don't know. All I know is my guy Herbert's going to be the best quarterback ever. So that's all.
Oh, boy. Okay. So you're just trying to troll a little bit. Do you think Burrow is a starter week one? And do you think Tua or Herbert are starters week one?
I think Herbert's a starter week one. I think Tua will have to see with the hip. And I think Herbert will not be a starter. I think Tyrod Taylor will start week one.
Okay. All right. We'll hold you to that. All right. Last one. So we're talking a lot about the quarterbacks that were drafted. Let's talk about the quarterbacks that were not drafted. In case you somehow missed this nugget after 5,000 people tweeted it over the weekend, Bill Belichick used none of his picks, not one, on a quarterback. Of course, this after getting rid of Tampa Bay Brady. He is not using any picks on a quarterback. He did this despite A, everyone assuming he definitely would draft a quarterback this year, maybe even in the first round, and B, his only quarterbacks being Jarrett Stidham, last year's fourth round pick, and a three-time Pats backup, Brian Hoyer. Those are his only two quarterbacks. Yet he didn't draft a single one. I should point out, he had a dog running his Zoom room for a little while. And when asked why he didn't pick a quarterback, he said it, quote, wasn't by design. Meaning, I don't know, like maybe they thought they were going to take one and they didn't. They also passed on some decent quarterbacks in spots where they took very questionable players. We'll get to that. But here's the thing. This is Belichick's spite starter. Jarrett Stidham is going to go 11-5 and prove to the world that Tom Brady was not the thing, that it was Belichick all along. He can make Stidham a winner. That's what he's trying to do. He didn't want to draft a quarterback. He just wanted to shove it up Brady's tuchus.
Nice Yiddish word. Yeah. I like it. Couple of things. Let's start with the dog, because I tweeted out that Bill Belichick stop caring about the draft. I had someone call me and it's like, yeah, Bill Belichick does not want to be on camera, and that's why he said they never had a camera in his war room ever.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Never, not once. And so that's why he had the dog fill in for him. His dog's name is Nike, by the way. Bill wanted to name him Jack. And I think that his girlfriend vetoed that and went with Nike. It's a little like miniature wolf. It's a good looking dog. So, but yeah, Belichick is his little Nantucket kitchen area, making draft picks. He looks just miserable. So to your point about the quarterback situation, this feels very much like a tank for Trevor.
Oh God.
This is a situation where oh, we're going God. With a tank for Trevor situation.
Are you serious right now? You're with Cowherd? This is a thing? You believe this?
I don't believe that they're outright trying to tank like for this actual person, but I think that that Belichick is saying, screw it, we're just going to suck. Because
no chance.
Stidham's not your guy. Stidham is not your guy. He's not going to win games for you. Again, we thought this at the start. Fourth round draft pick, right? Not drafted to be a starter. I think what Bill Belichick does is still goes and trades for Andy Dalton eventually, and then he goes 11-5 with the red water pistol, whatever, water rifle, red rocket, whatever his nickname is.
Yeah, all those.
And goes 11-5. I do not think Cam Newton's the guy there. I can't imagine go rolling with Stidham unless you're trying to suck. Tank for Fields, tank for Lawrence. There's a kid out of at a North Dakota State everyone likes, Trey Lance. Great football name.
You made that name up. That's not a real name.
I think
name.
His name is Trey Lance. Yeah, people had a mock draft, second or third quarterback going in the draft this year. So I think that he's looking maybe to next year already.
No. Okay. I'm just going to say, sorry. In every situation yeah, on this
yeah,
show.
Trey Lance. Yes. I don't care about Trey Lance.
That sounds like a knockoff of the Varsity Blues quarterback.
It does. That's Harvard. A great football name.
Dude, you are always right on this show. I am just the goofball who reads some internet and throws it at you. But in this case, I'm just playing this card. No, that's not what's happening. There's no way in the world that Bill Belichick.
Or Trevor.
Dude. Okay, hold on. I don't know if this has ever happened to you. You've been with your lovely wife for a long time. But if you have been in a relationship and then you broke up and you were going to go to somebody else's wedding and it was going to be the first time that all your old friends, everyone else, including maybe your ex, is going to be there. They're all going to see this new person that you're dating.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of pressure. You got to show up with somebody who's great, who's dancing, who's fun, who's having a good time. They got to be an attractive, cool person. You can't show up with the date equivalent of Jarrett Stidham, like, unless you think you can make that person fun.
Or you show up with a Jarrett Stidham and everyone feels sorry for you and they take pity on you.
No.
And then you eventually bounce back with the hot girl and Trevor Lawrence.
No, no. That's not what Bill Belichick's doing. He needs to show up at the party with the cool date. He either thinks Stidham can do that for him and he's going to invalidate everything Tom Brady did for 19 seasons by saying, look at this other rando I pulled off the bench to make into a winner. He's either thinking that. He's definitely not thinking about tanking. There's no chance he's thinking about tanking in what should be his final years in the NFL with a top-ranked defense. No effing way that's what Bill Belichick is thinking.
Then he has to trade for Andy Dalton. Like that, then that's what's going to happen.
Maybe.
Because Stidham is not that guy. He's not going to be that guy. Again, the fourth-round draft, he's not the hit rate on these guys being stars is very, very low. So I would say that that – Andy Dalton, in my opinion, is the play here. It's kind of always been the play. I would say that that's what they do. It's my guess.
Dalton over, I'm just going to put it out there because the draft helped clarify a few things. The Indianapolis Colts signed Philip Rivers to a one-year deal. That's about all you're ever going to get out of him. And then drafted Jacob Eason, right?
Yes, in the fourth round.
So the Colts have this year's player and the guy who might become the future player, maybe. Why would they keep Jacoby Brissett? What if Jacoby Brissett goes back to New England?
Oh, well, that's possible, of course, that he goes back there. But, I mean, and I will say, he doesn't get credit for playing, I think, as well as he did at times last year. And then he got hurt and it wasn't as good. So,
he played pretty good.
Brissett is there's a great opportunity for him, I think, there. Brissett's better than Stidham, in my opinion. I mean, I think they're going to look outside. They have time. There's no rush, right? There's no rush to find an answer here. But I can't imagine it's Stidham rolling to the party with Jarrett Stidham.
I think that Belichick thinks Stidham is going to be the life of the party, Belichick is going to see what he's missing out on. He's thinking, man, why did Brady's going to show up and is he going to be at the boring like table 17 having no fun? He's going to see Stidham out on the dance floor and he's going to think, oh man, I can't believe I broke up with him. I can't believe I ruined such a good relationship that I was in. That's what Belichick's counting on. I don't think it has anything to do with intelligence. I think emotion is now taking over the rational part of Bill Belichick's brain, and he is out to screw over Tom Brady. This is the spite starter Stidham, and that's what it is. We're going to move the line. It's an over-under game we like to play. We don't have any real bets to make, so we're going to make you bet on some fake things that I made up. I want to hit a few more headlines with some of these, so here we go. I want to know, Taysom Hill, over under snaps at quarterback taken this year compared to Jalen Hurts. Complicated way of saying, who plays some quarterback snaps more? Taysom Hill of the Saints or Jalen Hurts of the
Eagles? Well, the Saints paid Taysom Hill to take more snaps, so I got to hope that for their sake, they think it's Taysom Hill. The guy played 22% of snaps last year, the highest paid backup in NFL history. He's the third string quarterback. They brought in Jameis Winston to be the backup. I got to think it's Taysom Hill. I mean, I think they're going to try to find different ways to use Jalen Hurts. But, something that's important here, the reason why the Saints can use Taysom Hill in this manner is because they have an actual backup quarterback in Winston. If the Eagles' backup quarterback is right. Jalen Hurts, they can't use him in that manner. Because if he gets hurt, then they're screwed, right? Like, they're screwed. So I think we're going to see Taysom Hill used more because of that. Jalen Hurts is the actual backup quarterback. And you can't use him, in my opinion, in that manner, unless you want to dress a third quarterback, which some teams don't want to do.
Okay, but wait. So
we've sort of joked about Taysom Hill a bunch on this show and in text preparing for this show. So I just have to ask it again. This is not like a loaded question. I genuinely don't understand. Unless they think he's the quarterback who will take over after Drew Brees, which seems like there's very limited evidence that he's ready to do that, why are they paying him so much money? He's barely involved in the offense. I get that he's some sort of a super athlete. What's he doing?
No idea. They're paying him to be...
So there's no explanation.
Special teams are paying him to be, you know, I was listening yesterday. I think Mina Kimes was talking about his EPA, expected points added. We talked about this before. You know, it's good when he's in the game. I mean, I don't think the value of paying him $16 million for 1 year equals the amount of expected points added he brings to the Saints.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's fair of Jalen Hurts to start thinking of him as some sort of gimmick guy. Or like you said, if he's the backup, he's not going to be running out there to, you know, run trick plays and do silly nonsense with a quarterback on the field alongside him. Like, if he's the backup quarterback taken in the second round, they think he's good enough to be a starter in the NFL one day, and they're going to train him to be that, or maybe give him that shot. I mean, Wentz is hurt every year. Maybe Jalen will get a few reps, but don't think of Jalen Hurts, who at one point was the best college quarterback around, as some, like, you know, fluky tight end slot guy, weird, like he can do it all, Swiss Army knife. Like, that's probably an insult to Jalen Hurts. Let's move it along.
It is. He is a much better quarterback than is Taysom Hill. That's fair to point out.
Of course he is. He's a national champ. He was a Heisman contender. He's won in two places. Like, it's just silly. And there's more behind why people view it that way, but we're not getting into that. Niners rings this decade. Okay. They came close this past year. I want to know rings this decade over under 1.5. They've improved this offseason.
I'll go under just because it's hard to win in this league and hard to win two, right? I mean, it's just hard to do that. I will say that they might have had the best weekend, right? I wasn't really thrilled with the Kinlaw pick in the first round. I don't know how that helped them sort of now, but Brandon Ayuk is a great pick at Arizona State. It'd be a great weapon in that offense. And maybe the best play of the weekend was Trent Williams, getting Trent Williams from the Redskins. Joe Staley, longtime left tackle, retired. And they put out a great tribute video for him. I mean, he is a badass dude. He just beat the shit out of his opponents, worked his tail off. And he let them know he's retiring. And the Niners went out and got Trent for a fourth round pick. And dude, Trent can ball. He is so good. And I mean, they upgrade like the rich teams just get richer, right? You lose Joe Staley, a fringe Hall of Famer, and you add another fringe Hall of Famer in Trent Williams. It's incredible.
Yeah. So that's why we're talking about them right now. Here's the thing though. So they improved their line, which was already one of the best in the league. They improved their defensive line, if you believe that a first-round defensive tackle is going to help improve that line. Like, that's amazing. They already had this incredible pass rush. They're all, like, 25 and under, and now they got another young guy. And they got a wide receiver who most years would be, you know, one of the top two or three guys, right? And he slips all the way down in the first round. So they got everything they needed. They're still young. They still have this boy genius coach. And yet, I look at it and go, like, okay, so you're going to be the Bills of this decade? Like, I think you're going to get there a lot. I don't see them getting past the Chiefs. I don't see them getting past Stidham and Belichick when they make a Super Bowl run. Like, I just don't see them ever being the best team. I see them always being almost the best team.
Well, yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's the thing is, like, is... You know, is it because of Jimmy G?
Yeah, that's
never
going to
win that big game.
To me, yeah. I mean, Jimmy G's fine.
I think it's valid, especially when you have Russell Wilson. I think Kyler Murray's getting better in your division as well. The NFC just continues to get better, right? I mean, the AFC is very top heavy, but the NFC is just better overall as a conference, in my opinion.
Yeah, you need to go through a vastly improved Cardinals team twice. A Rams team that who knows if they'll ever be what they were a couple of years ago, but they're good for 8 or 9 wins probably. The Seahawks are good and still have a little bit of run left with them and Russell. We just talked about Aaron Rodgers and how fired up he's going to be this season. He loves playing the Niners. Like, they're just a buzzsaw of teams. And the Cowboys probably got better. Like, there's a lot of teams out there.
Yeah. The Cowboys had a great draft. Jerry just on his yacht drinking his bourbon and – had a great draft.
By the way, best part of the whole draft experience for me, as soon as it ended, Scott Van Pelt, his edition of SportsCenter is the thing that follows the first round. And you know how Scott always likes to start with the thing they love most, the video they love most. So, you know, usually they're coming off a basketball game and it's like some one-handed grab in a baseball game. In this case, he started with all the flexes by the GMs and owners. So he went with the Kingsbury flex and that bachelor pad. And then, of course,
Sean McVay.
Yeah, McVay, of course. And then also, yeah, like you mentioned, Jerry Jones and the hull of his yacht. I don't know. What are you doing down there? There's no way the Wi-Fi is better down there. That's only to flex.
It just was, and it was a weird, like, I wouldn't, it's like an all white room. Like, I just didn't think it was like that cool. I mean, the flex obviously is being on the boat, yacht. I'm not a yacht person. Like, that doesn't impress me.
No, you don't seem like a yacht person at all. I mean, I'm not.
I'd much rather have a private plane. Plane, that would impress me.
Take a PJ over a yacht?
Like, I would for sure rather get private jet wealthy than get yacht wealthy, which I think is even a different category than private jet wealthy.
Yeah, I think for a private jet, you really just need a pilot and a ground crew that you share with other people. For a yacht, man, you got to have a lot of people working on your yacht. That's like a whole economy.
You also just like, I'm also just like, it's too boring to just like sail across the sea. It's boring to shadow.
Sail across the sea. All right. Well, listen, seeing all these GMs and owners doing their thing got me very confused. So this will lead us to one of our last over-unders. So I just want to know, average number of kids per GM Zoom room, over under 1.5. Seemed like a lot of kids over. Hanging out with their dad.
So it was way over, by the way. And the one thing I think as a parent, every time I see a kid up that late, is that kid should be sleeping.
Yes.
My kids go to bed early. And I've seen these kids up at like 10:30 at night. I'm like, this kid should be sleeping. It's going to be a wreck tomorrow. I have PTSD of when my kids don't go to bed on time and they're wrecks in the morning.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, like, these kids, go to sleep, kids. Go to bed. I will say, we talked at the very start of the pod about things we liked about the draft. One thing I'd like to add here, because it makes sense, is one of the great things come out of this draft is front office personnel saying, look, hey, maybe I don't need to work 25 hours a day to get my job done. I can actually be home and have dinner with my family and spend more time being a father and a husband. I was like, that to me is the best revelation this entire process, because people spend too many hours in the facility just to spend hours in the facility. Like, I talked to coaches, they were happy to do it this way. They got to see their kids and their wife and have family time and still get all the work done. If you budget out your time for work, you can get it done and also see your family. And so the best thing I think to come out of this is, like, Bob Quinn, the Lions GM, said, I'm going to kind of reevaluate how I spend my time, knowing that we got our job done without spending so many hours in the building. So I think this actually is a huge plus moving forward for NFL coaches and front office members, I hope, that don't spend so much time in the facility.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it that way. That's a much kinder, more human way of saying it. I was going to be sort of a wise ass about it. I've always been led to believe that this is like the most complicated thing in the world, figuring out a draft board, and you're under this intense pressure, and it's add to that all this technological, you know, possibility for failure.
Yeah.
Like, how could you possibly think of a better pressure cooker? And yet almost every one of these guys is just kind of hanging out, and they got two or three kids hanging. In some cases, they got like two rando goofballs standing behind them, like Vrabel. Like, it just seemed to me like, oh, wait a sec, guys.
Yeah.
It's not that serious. Like, it's fine. You prepared for it. Today is a celebration. Relax.
Yeah.
Right?
I think this would have happened in January when the draft boards weren't set yet. It would have been more of a mess. I mean, they were pretty much set by the time that this happened. And so there wasn't much maneuvering done or had to be done. But I just think that they manned up. Like, all the complaining about it, they realized, like, look, and we talked about this on last week, before that, like, everyone else is going through this. We are doing this now, not any different than usual, but we're doing this via telecommunications. Everyone is working that way now, right? We're finding ways to get it done. My wife is doing it. Your wife's probably doing it. We're all doing it in that manner. And the NFL, stop bitching about it. Just get it done. And guess what? They stopped bitching about it and they got it done. And I think that they should be not even commended for it because everyone else is doing it, but just good job. You did the most basic thing possible. You emailed someone a draft pick. You're able to communicate via a cell phone to someone else in a different building. Like, congratulations. You did normal things that everyone else has been doing now.
Yeah. I mean, well said. Last one. Speaking of things everyone else is doing, I'm quite confident that everyone listening to this, though obviously football's their favorite sport, every single person who made it to the 40-something minute mark of this show has been watching The Last Dance, the MJ documentary on ESPN. I'm up to speed. I've watched all four. So I'm going to throw this at you. Knight's Dennis Rodman remembers from his 3 days of quote-unquote vacation back in 97 when he needed a little break from the Bulls and was missing for 72 hours. All we know is Incredible. He was in Vegas for part of it. How many nights of that does he remember at all?
Oh, I think he remembers the whole thing.
What?
Yeah, I think he remembers the whole thing. Because he mentioned he knew when they came and got him, right? Like, he talked about that incident. I think he remembers the whole thing. There's also a video of it. So there's so many great, crazy things about that. First of all, it can never happen now. With social media, you can't just leave.
You can't disappear.
But imagine, he went to the Bulls and said, I need to have a vacation. Can you let me go to a vacation? Now, they didn't say if he missed a game or not, which I don't think he missed. I think it was like during a break in the season.
There was a weird schedule thing. I don't think he missed a start.
I don't think he missed a start. So it's a little bit different than just missing a game. But Carmen Electra, 48 years old, still rocking it.
Okay, so I wasn't going to take it there, but yes, just agreed, and we won't go
further. I looked up her age yesterday just to make sure.
I think a lot of people probably did in that moment, and I don't want to turn into those guys, but my wife also looked it up.
She made sure that she was showing out for this documentary.
She did a great job. She made
sure. If you want to go to look at other things about their relationship, I believe Rachel Nichols or Ramona Shelburne, one of the two, tweeted out a story about Rodman and Electra in the Bulls facility. If you want to get a little risque, you go look at that. Pretty incredible to knit some of the stuff that went down. But lastly, let's end with this, Gabe. Do you agree with Bill Simmons that Dennis Rodman's story is boring?
Oh, wow. Okay, so I believe that Dennis Rodman... No, I think what Bill said, which I do agree with, I think what Bill said is, can we all now finally agree that Dennis Rodman talking isn't interesting? Like, Dennis Rodman's life is interesting to observe. Dennis Rodman explaining himself and giving his thoughts on things, not interesting.
I think that's actually fair to say, because like, I was like, okay, like, my wife kept asking me, like, why does he dress up weird? I'm like, I don't know. Why is his hair dyed? I don't know. Why does he have a lip ring? What did he tell you? I don't know. He didn't tell it. He didn't say anything.
Yeah. No, I think he wanted to project an image of weird and kooky and interesting. So he did a number of things that made us believe that. But there isn't actually a whole lot of insight behind it, which is what I think Bill was getting at. In general, I think Dennis Rodman is like an overrated individual and probably an underrated basketball player.
Yes.
What I found amazingly fun and weird about this documentary, though, is how hard it is to understand where you are in time and space. And if you are watching it with someone who doesn't know that history intimately, and we've lived it and then gone back and researched it again, I mean, man, it's kind of a hard thing to follow when you're trying to explain, like, oh, no, that's the coach. The guy who took the acid, he's the coach. They just haven't explained that his crazy offensive scheme is going to be what gets them to beat Rodman. No, because Rodman back then was on the Pistons. So stay with me here. So then he became a Bull, but he beat him with. And then, no, he's punching Scotty, but don't worry. They're going to be friends one day. It's very confusing.
I was trying to. My wife was on and off, like, watching it with me. And she asked me all these questions. Like I was basically, like, it's not about the gameplay. She's like, why don't they fight anymore? I'm like, they just don't. It's a different league. Why aren't they being this physical? Babe, it's just different. And then the best part is that when Rodman was explaining how everyone's shot rotated and then how it would affect
that was incredible.
Off the rim. It's brilliant. It's brilliant because he's right. I mean, he's right. Like Larry Bird's shot spun a little bit more, kind of like a little sideways than did most guys. It kind of went end over end. And yeah, if it hits off the rim, it's going a different direction. And so Meredith was like, I'm like, babe, just go back somewhere else. I cannot explain this to you. I'm just not doing it. So it was, I think it's been great so far. It's supposedly the next 3 or 4 episodes really hammer Jordan a little bit more than they have so far. Jordan, man, like his level of anger with Isaiah Thomas still is incredible.
I'm going to plug something because I worked on it, but I genuinely think it's interesting for people. Go check out Sports Wars MJ versus Isaiah. It's specifically about that period of time. Starts in 85 All-Star game when Michael Jordan believes that Isaiah Thomas orchestrated a freeze out to make him look bad as a rookie at the All-Star game, and goes all the way through the Olympics when Jordan, and we'll hear about this probably in the next episode or two, when Jordan basically makes sure that Isaiah isn't on the dream team. And their rivalry, the middle section of those 7 or 8 years there, they hate each other so damn much that, yeah, Jordan doesn't even – most times guys like Jordan are political. They, like, wink and nod, and they don't actually want to say the words, I don't like that guy. But, I mean, he couldn't be more clear. He still hates his guts. He absolutely hates him.
He absolutely despises him, and it's incredible. And Dan Rubenstein does Sports Wars. You should go listen to that. Dan's awesome. And, no, he's like, he didn't even want to see the video. They're like, here's an explanation. And I thought Isaiah Thomas's explanation seemed plausible. I don't know if it was real at the time. You know, like, I don't know if that's actually, you know, if it's easy to make up that excuse 40 years later, but or 30 years later, but it seemed plausible that's what happened.
No, they were being sore losers, and Jordan knew it, and that was very intentional. And Isaiah gave away his argument when he said, and they showed the video, like, Lane Beer kind of looked at him and was like, let's do this thing. And Isaiah went along with it knowing that it was sending a message. Yeah. So you can't pretend after the fact that it wasn't meant to send a message. It sent the message. The message was received.
That's true.
Period. I mean, stand by it. If you wanted to send the message of screw you haven't earned our respect yet, fair enough. But, like, there was a message sent.
It was. Man, it's been fun watching this documentary. Like, it brings back – and look, I was 11 when the Bulls won their fourth title. Like, I was about to turn 12. Sixth title in 98. So, like, I sort of remember, the Bulls, but not really. Like, my first basketball kind of memories was, like, the late 90s Lakers, right? Nick Van Etzel, Vlade Divac, like that team. And so I remember the idea of Jordan, but I don't really remember watching Jordan play very much. And so it's been fun to kind of relive that style of basketball, the competitive of Jordan. I mean, Jordan rips Scotty. He rips Horace Grant. He says, I don't want Bill Weddington taking the final shot of the game. I mean, he rips everyone. He doesn't. You could tell that he doesn't really believe Scotty Pippen migraine excuse. Like, he tried to play it off, like, kind of nice. Like, he had a migraine. But Jordan, in the back of his head, is like, screw this guy. He has a migraine.
He never once believed it. He couldn't process the idea that Scotty could have a migraine in the biggest moment of his career, and that even if he had a migraine, that he couldn't play through it. Like, Jordan is so focused and narcissistic that he can't possibly understand how that's possible. And who knows if he wondered what else was going on, but you're right. 30 years later is like, no chance that's what it was. By the way, in 1998, I was focused on basketball champions, but in fact, I was the champion. Jeff.
Oh, geez.
Because we've been doing this show on video and you've been flexing with your background trophy room, I just thought I'd match you. And this is a 1998 Westchester Jewish Basketball League first place trophy. Okay. My friends and I won that representing the WJC in Larchmont, Mamaroneck, New York. And it's been back there, and you hadn't asked me about it. You've got your Chiefs gear and your Giants gear and all this NFL paraphernalia. It's shown how great a success you are athletically. And this has been sitting there the whole time we're doing video, and you never once mentioned it. So now I had to. This is the part Zuri will probably edit out, but I just didn't want to miss my chance. You know, he gave me the segue in 1998 championship. It says it right here.
I should have my dad send me all my trophies as a kid, too.
Oh, okay. All your trophies. Sure. Yeah.
Congratulations, Gabe.
Thank you.
I've never won a championship at any level of anything.
No? Okay. There's a good place for us to pause because I have. Yeah. It's right here.
Congratulations.
I am more of a champion than you, Jeff.
Congratulations. Have you won an Emmy before?
That's it. That's the only thing I've ever won.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Okay,
I mean, I have some intramural championships in college. I never won anything meaningful except for this.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Huzzah to Gabe. I went in. The Western Jewish Club Athletic
Westchester
League.
Jewish Basketball League. Come on, Jeff.
You're probably the tallest one there, too.
No, but we were tall. I was a tall point guard. I was a 6-footer in high school. And we had a couple guys over 6 feet on the front line, so we were a big team. No one had a body mass index of greater than like 8%. It was a skinny crew. But we were a little bit of like tall, skinny trees, and it helped us win a championship as sophomores.
Spark plug. I love it.
Yeah.
I did not think we were going this direction.
No,
today.
Just end the show as though we had just finished talking about Dennis Rodman, because this is all going to get edited out by Zuri.
We should keep this. Because if you're listening by the 58th minute of this podcast, then you definitely are a fan of this show, and you would love to know the information that Gabe was once a champion basketball player.
Thank
same
you.
Level as Jordan, of course. I mean, same accomplishments. as Michael Jordan. Well, if you've made it this long, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening. I think I had a lot of fun talking about this Rodgers. I mean, it fires me up. I think that we're getting this conversation about mentors all wrong, because I've actually had someone mentor me versus I've seen guys not be mentored. So I definitely think it was worth talking about. I believe we're taking a little bit of a break right now. The NFL draft is over. We have really no NFL topics for a little bit of time. I'm still going to be around. Don't worry. I'll be on Twitter. We're gonna plan some fun things to maybe do in the meantime. But take care, everyone. Hope you stay safe. And hope you enjoy your football. And hopefully we have football back soon. Schedule comes out, I believe, in, I don't know, 2 weeks about, May 9th. So looking forward to the actual schedule. And it looks like we'll have a season. So I'm pumped for that. All right, guys. Take care. Thank you for listening. Rate, review, subscribe. Have a great one.